dyslexia.
Yeah, all right, that's good.
New approach, new treatment. All right, I'll write down treatment. And a lot of people don't know that much about dyslexia. I don't know about it. I think maybe I am dyslexic to a certain extent because I invariably transpose telephone numbers when I write them down, when I dial them. Is that some form of dyslexia?
Yes, it is. And also your speech pattern on the just previous lead into the program showed a couple of little dyslexic indicators.
Huh.
However,
a mild case, I hope.
Oh, yes, probably. Well, actually, you know, you can be in very good company because I would think from my investigations and all of the world's geniuses were dyslexic. To name a few, of course, like Edison and Einstein, Leonardo da Vinci going way back, Winston Churchill, Woodrow Wilson, the Rockefellers, all of them. You know, that's not too bad company. George Patton, you know, one of our famous generals in the Second World War, was completely dyslexic. Fortunately, he was running the tank, so if he turned left instead of right, didn't matter too much.
I did a play about Winston Churchill. I played Winston Churchill, and one of the things that came out was that he was a failure in public school or public school age. But when he got into military school, then that's where he really began to shine.
Oddly enough, military schools have a tendency to, as they say, create miracles. Now, there is a specific reason. A number of reasons. One is they march an hour and a half every day, which is neural organization. This is the cross patterning. Secondly, the time is completely organized, and a dyslexic or the learning disabled has a very difficult sense of time. They have no sense of time. They can't organize themselves, so the days are organized, and they get specific time set aside for homework and things of that sort, so that the military school does produce a sense of control of their lives, and as they get a little older and a little more mature and they lose some of the impatience of your very, you know, abject youth, they tend to be able to, not all, but many are able to cope and function very well.
So there are many people like myself, then, who are minorly dyslexic.
Oh, yes. They're more, let's say, of the lesser dyslexics than of the profound, fortunately. Now, just for the listener's edification and your own, possibly, dyslexia is one of the better known of the learning disabilities. And it's essentially the inability to process language, whether it be written, spoken, or symbolic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the symbolism, of course, goes beyond things of just letters and numbers, but also into verbal intonation, facial expressions, body language, body gestures, things of this sort, where many times the dyslexic boy particularly, and or girl, but boy primarily, will interpret many things that are friendly gestures as threatening moves, and will respond in, you know, in kind, and so they become behavioral problems and many other things. Most people think also that learning disabilities tend to start when you go to school at 9 o'clock in the morning and get done at 3 o'clock when you're done, and then you don't have it anymore. Well, it's a 24-hour problem. And just to reiterate some of the other things, there's a difficulty in understanding words, particularly the vowels in words, and just normal conversation. So many of the children early on, particularly in the second and third year of life, when they're learning language, and they don't process the vowels, they speak without vowels, and it sounds like Martian, and many of the parents will be able to relate to that one. There's a poor and non-existent sense of direction. They're constantly getting lost. They have no concept of time. They can't concentrate. They're easily distracted. There's always a sort of a disequilibrium. They usually take longer to learn how to ride a bike or to learn how to roller skate or ice skate or one of those things. There's poor motor coordination. They're bumping into things. They're dropping things.
Now, a lot of people do all of these things. Are they dyslexic without...
I would think so. Dyslexic, yeah.
Dyslexic. All right. They are. Without being serious...
For the most part, I would say yes. There's other things, like, for instance, difficulty in remembering names. Maybe you don't remember names at all.
That is one of my problems.
Okay,
yeah.
And that's a biggie. There's emotional mood swings. They have to, when you read something, you have to reread the same word a number of times or a whole phrase because you just don't make sense of it. Or you have to go back to the beginning of the paragraph to remember what the heck it said. Following sequential instructions is difficult, particularly if you tend to be lost and you ask somebody directions, they will go three blocks up, two lights over, and forget it, you're already lost again. Difficulty in following motion, moving things, balls. You never know in a ball game, particularly a football game, who has the ball. I mean, you just can't follow that motion with your eyes. Many phobias and going over bridges and things like this where there's peripheral motion involved. This becomes a very difficult thing. And that brings up another very important factor of automobile accidents with the dyslexic or learning disabled, particularly in the males, being it seems to be a more predominantly male problem. The insurance companies recognize the under 25 male is a more accident-prone individual. And it's not because he drinks or because of this or because of that, but because many don't follow motion, don't see the motion of the car coming from the left particularly. And if you look at the accidents, you'll see on a road there should not have been an accident, somebody hit him from the left, ran into him. He didn't run into them because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, going over bridges where the struts of the bridge give a kind of a peripheral motion, which is very disorienting. They'd rather stay in the middle somewhere. They tend to fall asleep at the wheel sometime on a highway or at night when the lights of the other side are coming towards them. And that results in a bunch of accidents. There's also a feeling of inferiority, stupidity, clumsiness. It just seems to go on and on. And other factors that are very important, just again to put the thing in perspective, 92% of everyone's in prison can't read or write. Now that says a big thing.
Just because of dyslexia or because?
Primarily because, you know, everybody has complaints about the school system and whatever, and in many cases they're justified. But we cannot be that bad. These people find it almost painful to attend school because they're not making it. And, you know, in this world, the biggest thing is don't be a dummy. And when you're in school and you can't cope and you don't know what the teacher said, and you don't know what the assignment was to do for homework, and you go home and you say, well, we didn't have an assignment, or I did it in school, or I forgot the books. They've always got an excuse somehow, and they are not able to cope. They tend to drop out of school. They don't learn how to read or write, and even those that have learned, because their language use is limited, they get a job of less quality someplace. And they're not required to read, they're not required to write, outside of maybe signing their paycheck is about the only writing they ever do. And so they rapidly forget what they did know to read or write. And it becomes quite a problem.
One of the things in school is this kind of peer pressure. You don't want to admit to someone else in your class that you didn't understand or that you didn't know what the lesson is.
Oh, yeah. So what do? Then you start to become a class clown. A disruptor, a bully, to distract from the fact that, well, you have another reason why you didn't do that assignment, because the teacher was yelling at you. You got sent down to the principal. This guy over here did this. Now, all he did was he looked at you, you see, but that was enough to start a fight. And they'll say, he looked at me. Well, you know. And then, of course, parents are well aware, for the most part, that the child has a problem. In early on, they're a slow crawler, if they crawl at all. They're a slow walker, they're a slow talker. They just aren't up to par most of the time. And they go to the pediatrician, and the pediatrician says, well, he'll outgrow it. He's just immature. Well, of course he's immature. That's one of the big problems. He's not trying hard enough. He's not paying attention. And they are paying attention, and they are trying so hard. And they become, to a large degree, abused children, either physically or emotionally, because the parents are constantly, and the teachers are constantly on their back, you're a dummy, you're not trying hard enough, you're lazy, you're no good, you're stupid, you're this, you're that, and then none of these things. And, of course, unfortunately, you see, what happens is there's a guilt trip with the parents, because one of those parents is learning disabled. You see, they're looking for the genetic link, and they haven't found the genetic link, which means within the genes per se. But it is familial. It runs in families. and it's the lookalikes. And of course, that's one of the things that I sort of discovered in the terms being a chiropractor and utilizing what's called applied kinesiology, which is a relatively new science within chiropractic. It's about 21 years old, where we utilize the movements of the body and the cranial corrections within the body, and it's the shape of your bones that makes you look like someone else. So what happens is certain shapes will have a tendency to allow for certain distortions that other shapes don't more readily. And it's always been the lookalikes. And
what do you mean lookalikes then? Someone who resembles?
Resembles, yeah. In other words, if the, let's say the son has the problem. Well, and he looks like the father, you can bet the father has the problem.
Of dyslexia.
Of dyslexia or learning disability to a greater or lesser degree.
Now, we're talking about learning disability and dyslexia.
Yeah.
I know dyslexia can cause a learning disability.
Well, dyslexia is one of the learning disabilities. They tried to make it a specific dyslexia in terms of language and particularly printed language, but it's beyond that because dyslexia is language. And they have dysphonic for those that have a speech problem and dysgraphic for those that have a writing problem and dyscalculic for those that have a number problem.
I didn't know that.
And it goes on and on. But the thing is, they labeling because they can't fix. So they label. They try to say, well, all right, here's his major problem. But in most cases, the learning disabled is dyslexic in that they have a problem in reading, and they are dysgraphic because they have a problem in writing, and they are dyscalculic because they have a problem in math. Now, not all, but of course, most.
Yeah. All right, Dr. Carl Ferrari is the one who's been speaking for the most time. Dr. Mitchell Corrin is also here. What we were talking about, the reason we had you on the program, is that there is, you've pretty well explained dyslexia, many forms of it, and there are probably some other things that I want to ask, but there is a new treatment now. Dr. Corwin, can you explain what the treatment is?
From the work of Dr. Carl Ferrari, he has investigated through methods of applied kinesiology a protocol, an actual procedure from beginning to end, that can relatively cure or successfully treat the learning disabled. It addresses all the aspects that we talked about, the auditory, the visual, the writing. It's a very specific procedure. It is not a simple procedure. Matter of fact, it's quite a lengthy procedure. Lengthy in the time it takes to work with that individual. However, the frequency, in other words, the number of treatments necessary, is extremely short. In other words, we can work with an individual, if time requires, within a week or two, and effectively resolve these inabilities to process language. Mm-hmm. Then they have to go out and remediate or just practice learning what they have not learned. It's sort of like taking a computer and erasing the bad program, and now with a blank tape, just fill in the new data, fill in the new processes.
Is this for adults, the treatment?
Adults, children. It's interesting. Here's an advantage for children. The children respond the quickest.
Uh-huh.
They are actually the easiest to work with. And we're not talking about an age restriction of the child that can verbalize his complaints. We can work with them whether they're an infant, I mean, as much as just a couple of weeks old.
At that point, can you tell if a child is dyslexic?
Well, you can tell in using the parameters that we use. There's obviously no educational parameters that can be used, but we use cranial indicators. There are six specific basic cranial positions that must be functional, and if there are four faults out of the six, then that individual is learning disabled to a greater or lesser degree.
And you can tell in 2 weeks.
And we could tell
of a two-week-old.
At any age, it doesn't matter. The youngest patient that I had was 3 weeks old. 5 days for something else, but 3 weeks old in the area of something we need to do cranially. And in the learning disability, the oldest patient so far has been 70 years old. Mm. And any age in between, it really makes little difference. Your life can be changed almost immediately. in my practice, because being the innovator and the main researcher and whatever, I do have an international practice. And oddly enough, I have many patients from California that come east to Brooklyn, and I have patients
from... That's an experience in itself.
That is a big experience
in itself.
I don't
know if a dyslexic can take that.
Well, many can't. That's another fact. It's an interesting little story, but I have people from Botswana and in Africa and from Pakistan and India and Israel, many from Haifa in Israel. I have a whole colony of patients there. Europe, Canada, the 50 states, with the exception of Alaska for some reason, or 49 states, and Australia, and many in England. And fortunately, in this particular situation, the people don't have to travel east. They have a doctor right here, Dr. Corwin, who is available for their treatment and or information or anything else. But I have a number of people call me from Pennsylvania. I was on a program there just recently, and they couldn't face coming to Brooklyn. Now, the reason primarily was they came from an area of maybe 50 or 60,000 people, and they're going to approach Brooklyn, which is one of the boroughs of New York, which has more than 4.5 million people, and they didn't think they could handle that at all.
Yeah. So I was being a little jocular there, but this is a serious problem. Then.
That's why we have to have doctors all over the country. I'm here in San Francisco at the moment teaching a seminar at the... Clarion Hotel at the airport, and for the local doctors, and of course, unfortunately, many of them are not local, they're from wherever they're from, to learn these techniques. And we have approximately throughout the world about 300 doctors that have some awareness of what we're doing. Not all of the people that have taken the seminars are treating the learning disabled, because it is somewhat complicated, as Dr. Corwin said. And it does take some practice and whatever, and they're kind of a little afraid of it. But they'll learn more, and we're in the process now of starting a whole teaching program for the doctors themselves.
Now, Dr. Clayton, you are in the East Bay.
Corwin. Yes.
Corwin, all right,
actually,
I'm sorry.
You have my card.
Clayton, you're on Clayton Road. That's now that's dyslexic.
Isn't that, well,
that I read the wrong word in the wrong place, but I read the word correctly. Okay, you practice in...
I have an office in Concord, and I also have an office closer to the East Bay here in Berkeley, right across the street from the Claremont Hotel, a very pleasant area.
So... those are for people in the East Bay that can contact you. Are there other doctors in the East Bay, in the West Bay, in the entire Bay Area?
Hopefully after this weekend they will be a lot more aware.
But you're about the only one in the Bay Area that's doing this practice?
Yes.
No. So people can call you and find out more about it, and also what other doctors will... Well, now, will the doctors be able to learn in one weekend?
No, not really. Most of the people, some of the other doctors in the Bay Area, and if anybody wants that information, they can write to my office in Brooklyn and get that information, have taken one or two seminars previously, and this is their, let's say, not necessarily graduation course, but hopefully they'll be able to be more able to do the work specifically. We, as we mentioned before, we have a book, and we also have pamphlets available and other information. They can send to me, Dr. Carl Ferreri. Now, it's spelled F-E-R-R-E-R-I. See, they spell the car wrong. So this way, you might remember the name at least. And the address is 3850, that's 3850 Flatlands Avenue. And it's one word, Flatlands Avenue. And it's Brooklyn, New York, and the zip is real easy. It's 11234. Now, to order the book, we tried to make it easy for you. And so we got an 800 number, and all you have to do is call 1-800-833-3111. That's 833-3111. And they'll handle it with MasterCard or whatever you want to do with it.
All right, the book is $14.95. It's called Breakthrough for Dyslexia and Learning Disabilities. And it's been on the market for a couple of years
Two and a half years almost.
All right. And if you couldn't write that address down, we'll give it to you once again. And if you are not in a position to, you can always call Cable. We'll give you that information.
Well,
in addition,
that.
Free of charge, except for if this program is rebroadcast, it may be changed. But right now, it's a 22-cent stamp.
Yeah. There